You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
On Monday, The Athletic released a story about a rift within the Dallas Mavericks organization centered around the team's director of quantitative research and development, Bob Vulgaris. The report detailed allegations of a strained relationship between Vulgaris and the face of the franchise, Luka Doncic, specifically citing two incidents from earlier this season. A January game where Vulgaris headed for the locker room toward the end of a Maverick loss, something Doncic apparently noticed and disapproved of. And a February game where Doncic reportedly snapped at Vulgaris. The article goes on to quote various anonymous internal Dallas sources who complain about Vulgaris' bedside manner. Then it goes on to make a connection between Vulgaris' undeniable influence within the Mavericks and their recent playoff ousters. It's the sort of story that basketball Twitterati hoovers up. Twitterati, that's a hard word to say. Twitterati. Basketball purists versus the analytics crowd, part 857. Now, full disclosure, I just wanted to put this out there. I know Bob Vulgaris, but I didn't speak to him prior to making this. So this is just my opinion. I don't know anybody. I haven't talked to anybody. This is just my opinion. These are not the words of anyone else. Now that we got that out of the way, I greatly admire Bob's acumen and intelligence. I found our basketball conversations to be spirited and enlightening. He's really good at this. I mean, this is a man who went from being a skycap at the airport to literally a millionaire off betting on basketball games. At one point, he employed an army of programmers, refining the algorithms that kept him one step ahead of the odds makers and indeed many NBA decision makers. He consumes a ridiculous amount of NBA information each season, including watching hundreds of games. He tracks lineups, substitution patterns, defensive matchups, coaching tendencies, referee tendencies, and all of this was before he worked for an NBA team. This is a very smart man, both in the context of overall intelligence and in the narrow scope of evaluated basketball. Having said all that, Bob could be an asshole. He's strongly opinionated and can appear to be unyielding or uncompromising at times. Ultimately, the story of Bob Vulgaris isn't one of right or wrong. In many ways, it's not even about Bob. It's about the unpredictable predictability of human beings. When people envision the shortcoming of analytics or analytic-driven experts, they turn to old tropes like you can't measure heart or feel or chemistry or motivation or any of the other stuff Stugatz likes to blurt out when he can't figure out what else is going on. The reality is the biggest pitfall for any NBA front office or coaching professional, regardless of whether or not they have an analytics background, is communication. The NBA, as with many work environments, there is a delicate dance when it comes to information and how it is used. Its value is not just rooted in its accuracy. How it is received is often just as important. I remember early on in my career as a video coordinator when I was with the Suns, having a convo about this with my then boss, David Griffin, who's currently the executive VP of basketball ops with the New Orleans Pelicans. We had a very open work environment in Phoenix where discussion and sharing of pertinent information and opinions was encouraged, regardless of the station of the speaker. I remember I had been embroiled in a heated debate about some player or something, and through the use of supporting evidence, I had invalidated the point of whoever was talking. Afterward, Griff pulled me aside and let me know, sometimes it's not enough to be right. You have to attract people to your side. In essence, I kind of put the guy on blast in front of a room full of people. And even though my point was right, it kind of embarrassed him. And that might trigger further resentment down the line, which would become an obstacle for things I was trying to do later, had I not been alerted to that by Griff. I'm reminded of a conversation with a very popular, well-liked player claiming analytics were not respected in the locker room and could never account for or supplant feel. As an almost non sequitur, someone then asked the player about how critical the corner three-point shot had become in the NBA. And without skipping a beat, the player began to wax at length at the importance of the corner three, how their offense was designed to generate a large volume of them, how they are drummed in their heads about the ills of giving up the corner three on the defensive end. The guy never put two and two together that the strategy that he was talking about was born out of the very thing he derided. When I heard that, I knew whoever preached that gospel to him did it extremely well. The reality is, it didn't matter how we got to the conclusion that corner threes are important. All that matters is we have buy-in. They can't resist it if they don't know it came from their unhappy place. In the end, all this really is just versions of Pat Riley's disease of me, applied to a front office setting. Feelings of underappreciation, paranoia over being cheated out of one's rightful share, resentment of the competency of another. Part of being successful at being part of a functional operation is managing these forces, regardless of your role within the front office. I'm Amin Ohassan for Metalark Media. And I approve this message. Sasha, Michelle, Malia.
So I went to the Father's Day section of Saks Fifth Avenue, and the top-selling items are $580 Alexander McQueen sneakers. Wow. Nice. So they like if not opulent in like its reputation, they certainly sell opulent things.
I don't know this for sure, but James Harden was named to the board at Saks, and I know that Saks has a relationship with my former corporate overlords at Sports Illustrated, ABG. And ABG loves building brands off of athletes and having like athlete relationships and business and kind of like selling people's life rights, including athletes. Like they have Shaq and Greg Norman and a bunch of athletes there that they represent. I don't know if that's why Harden is involved with Saks, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was part of some type of arrangement there.
Jessica, I've been meaning to ask you actually about your experience at Sports Illustrated, because throughout my childhood, that was the destination. It was not ESPN. For what I was doing, that's the place that I wanted to arrive. That brand was the very best of what it is that Greg Cody and I grew up doing.
Right. Oh, for sure. And oddly enough, coincidentally enough, I talked to Jessica on my Greg Cody Show podcast this week about Sports Illustrated and how she had a very interesting role at SI. Am I right?
Yes, Jessica? I will get to that in a second. Thank you. Just getting in there very vigorously.
He's had nothing
to offer the entire time we've been talking. Like that, I just coughs, and then all of a sudden he sees an opening. Like, where can I get more clicks off of the Levitard show? Let me tell them the Jessica. How quickly did he book you, Jessica? Did he wait for you to be hired before he booked you on his podcast?
He did. He did wait a while. But yeah, the interview was. It was interesting. We got very personal on the Greg Cody show with Greg Cody.
Too personal.
The head of the union, and I wanted to talk to her about some of this, because one of the reasons that I find it interesting is, and I will try to keep this story short, it wasn't but 2 years ago or so that somebody went into a meeting with the idea of buying Sports Illustrated, and they thought the meeting went well. And when it was over, looked around and said, Sports Illustrated doesn't have the worth that it used to have. It doesn't have very much worth at all. and then it got bought up by these mercenaries, correct? These were not people who cared in any way about what Sports Illustrated was. They were just there to parasite, to buzzard. They were just there to feed on the carcass of what was a once proud name, correct?
Yeah, the sale was a little confusing in that Meredith, which owned Sports Illustrated, basically bought Sports Illustrated to sell Sports Illustrated. So it kind of starts there. It also, Sports Illustrated had been owned and operated by Time Inc. before that. So the operations were never very steady, I would say. But then Meredith flipped SI to ABG, which isn't a media company. They're like this brand, like they're Authentic Brands Group. They're a brand company.
And the brand has been ruined, correct? Like, I don't know what you're allowed to say about this.
When Jessica left, it was, yeah.
Yeah, I was definitely the death knell to Sports Illustrated. They were devastated to see me go. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say the brand is ruined. I would say it's definitely been hurt a lot by layoffs and bad business. And there's still really good reporting that happens there. Like, this, specifically, the reporters and editors, people who actually make the stuff there are still talented and still trying to do good work.
But they don't feel they don't feel cared for, correct? They don't feel like the employer. What I've always known about Sports Illustrated, and I come from a time when that was a super arrogant organization at the top, but they took care of their people. Like, that was that was something that was known, that Sports Illustrated was the brand standard for how you treat people. And so something along the line changed. That's not how you felt there, right? Like, I believe that's part of what's happened to the, like, it's not just the printed media has died. There are still very good people working there, but that's soul crushing to not feel like the people who employ you care about the product you're making.
Yeah, we unionized for a reason. And the reason was that the employees had no say in the direction of the company and to the detriment of the work that we were trying to do. Like, journalism isn't something that you can kind of slap together. Like, it requires resources, it requires time, it requires care. And it was very frustrating to see that model shift overnight between, let's make good journalism, let's make a magazine, let's make things that people want to read. And then, let's just like write some blogs. We'll hire some random people to create websites and drive traffic. And that's how we'll make money. And that's our new business model.
What were you joining, though? What did you think you were joining, and how quickly did it change?
I mean, the first year I worked at Sports Illustrated was super fun. Like, I was joining a company where we had a lot of freedom and creativity. And I was working on a show where I was able to travel and come up with like weird ideas for videos and have a podcast and do a lot of fun things. But then, you know, a year passes, the company gets sold, half of my coworkers are laid off, and the entire strategy of the company shifted literally overnight. And it was completely different after that. Like, and then the pandemic hits, of course, there's more layoffs. Like, now everyone in media is struggling. Now, even if you do want to get a new job somewhere, you can't. No one's hiring. It's the worst economy since the Great Depression. Things definitely changed overnight, I would say, after the company was sold.
I feel like Greg Cody has no interest in this subject matter because it's not happening on his podcast right now, because he's already covered all of it.
Cover ground,
because
Dan.
He has heard it, and we are in reruns around here.
I'm actually very interested because SI is a microcosm, not a microcosm, just indicative of everything that's happening in journalism. And I had such respect for SI. I had stacks of SIs. I used to save them in my teenage years and my 20s, and you know, being on the cover of SI was the most prestigious thing in sports, and their photography was as renowned as their writing. And then all of a sudden, all of these great photographers are laid off, and it was it's just a death knell that has resonated across journalism.
The ABG model of, like, they just want to basically sell people's brands, like their images. Like, they want to sell Shaq. They want to sell Shaq's, like, Super Bowl beach party and make money off of that event. Like, that's their business model. And so them purchasing Sports Illustrated, I think, was the first sign that, like, they're not really interested in reporting and journalism. They're not, you know, and no one really is anymore, right? Like, this isn't just happening at Sports Illustrated.
Well,
to Greg's point,
weren't they making like some vitamin supplement or something, saying Sports Illustrated,
right?
Vitamin supplements.
Yeah, brain supplements. And like, that's the thing, they want to take the name Sports Illustrated and sell it on whatever they can. And that's the new business model, because they don't think that they can just make money off of selling the work itself, because selling the work itself means investing in reporters and investing time into stories that take a long time to be made.
I am stunned, Stugatz. In 2021, I was legitimately stunned to see, and Billy, I wanted to hear what you had to say about this, paparazzi still chasing around Ben Affleck and J-Lo and catching them making out in a restaurant, which I got to think at this point they're doing on purpose, because I can't believe that in their 50s, the passion is so ignited that they have to kiss over dinner.
Well, how do you know, Dan?
I mean... don't know. I'm being cynical there, but I'm thinking that perhaps they like to be photographed, even though they were caught in Montana originally, which is not where you expect to get caught.
No, Montana's a new California, Dan.
It is.
What are your thoughts here, Billy, as A-Rod has been moved out of the picture and Ben Affleck is making out in public with J-Lo and getting caught? Was it the New York Post that caught them?
Love isn't real. I mean, I think it's obvious. I think that's the big takeaway from this. Love is fake. Love is staged. They're two rich people, okay? They're not going to get photographed unless they want to get caught. They have mansions, multiple mansions that they can kiss in all they want. And A-Rod, another thing about him, yesterday or the day before, he was showing off his Rolex and tagging Rolex like if he's this influencer. Can we invent a new thing that's not watches? Do people still wear watches? But that's not related to this question. I'm just over them. I'm over them. I thought it was true love, and now I realize that it's not. I don't need Bennifer again. I had enough Bennifer earlier in my life. Can they just go away? Can we get another couple? Also, where are their kids? Can they be watching their children?
Wow. Wow. Taking out the parents of...
I'm just saying, Dan, as a current parent now, I realize the importance of watching your children. And it seems to me that they like to go all around town doing all of these things, getting photographed doing all of these things. And I wonder, where are their children? Who's helping them with their homework?
Billy, there's nothing better than a good babysitter. I'm not going to crush them for this. Nothing like a nice night out with a good babysitter.
I love Billy, an expert on all things rearing children.
I've been a parent for 2 weeks now, Dan.
2 weeks.
Billy's right. More parenting, less necking.
Put it on the poll, necking. Please. Please necking. Put it on the poll at Levitard Show. More parenting. J-Lo and Ben, : more parenting, less necking. Yes or no? And has anyone under 80 years old use the term necking for making out? It's gonna be, I have not heard that phrase in 30 years. Necking, I'm thinking maybe more than that, more than 30 years, 40 years, happy days. Necking?
I think happy days, yes, you identified the last time we heard the word necking.
50 years.
Is there any other terms in this realm? Would canoodling be this realm?
Canoodling is like 1800s, but necking is a specific time about half a century ago. It's something that Chachi did with Joni. Mm-hmm. It's what made Henry Winkler cool. I want you to think about that for a second. Henry Winkler as a standard for cool in America.
The 40-year-old teenager.
The coolest.
The coolest.
40-year-old teenager.
What about macking?
No, but macking is so much cooler than necking. Yeah. Necking and necking is so stiffly lame.
I have another nominee, petting.
Petting?
Petting.
Yeah. Look it up.
That's just creepy. That's just like a weird one.
It is, but it's real, though.
I actually just looked up a list of this, and heavy petting is one of them, so he's right.
The thing that I'm confused about when it comes to your father, Chris, is petting in your household is farting.
No, that's a true. Pet. When you lay a pet.
Let a pet. Who let a pet?
Let a pet?
Yeah, that's growing up. I mean, it hasn't continued, but my parents used to refer to flatulence as a pet.
Is that what Greg, Wild Bill called it?
That's right.
How many how many of those things do you think will die because your kids won't kind of carry them on? It seems like you're carrying the weight of your family's legacy with a lot of these things.
A lot of it will go
your
with
sons.
I think it's French. I'm being told back here that it's French to call a fart a pet. And another thing he does is when he would have to go poop, he would say, "I got to go take a QK."
Right. That continues. A quick crap, but crap spelled with a K.
What's wrong with that?
It's hard to explain these things. It really is. Saying them aloud makes them sound dumb.
It's not hard to explain. You are the strangest person in the universe.
If if you had my wife on and you said, what does Greg mean when he says, I got to go take a QK, she would know exactly what you meant. She's a beautiful woman.
Romance. Put it on a Hallmark card.
My family says dropping the kids off at school.
I like
or the
it.
Pool.
Or the pool. Yeah.
Yes. The pool. Yeah. I like that.
Greg, my favorite part of that was you saying these out loud makes them sound ridiculous.
Yeah, it really does.
And the whole thing is you saying it out loud.
And it was ridiculous.
Thank you.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.